listener production.
Please leave your message after the tone.
Why am I jealous of my ex?
I am so stressed all the time.
How do I get into a routine?
Is TikTok making me anxious?
I think I'm being manipulated.
Someone told me you could live with half a brain.
This is Do You Fucking Mind? Mindset Hacks for a Badass Life. Hosted by me, Alexis Fernandez.
Welcome to the episode of today. So in today's episode, I'm going to be talking about the neuroscience of fasting and the benefits of fasting on the brain and how it also is neuroprotective as well. Okay. And I found this episode I found it harder to plan than I thought I would, only because there are so many different subcategories to talk about when it comes to the neurological benefits of fasting, that I was trying to keep it to a minimum. And it's just something I've wanted to speak about for a very long time. So I thought I'm just going to touch a couple of things now. And then if I want to do a part two later, I will do a part two later. Now, a bit of a disclaimer here. When I talk about fasting, this entire episode that I talk about fasting, I want you to separate me talking about fasting as far as the benefits on the brain versus things you have heard about fasting for weight loss purposes. Because when you look at fasting for weight loss purposes, you've got all these different schools of people that talk about, oh, but it benefits this, and no, it doesn't benefit that, or it's actually not superior to this, or it is. You're going to have all these different arguments. I'm not here to talk about fasting for weight loss. While, of course, weight loss is likely going to be a side effect of fasting if you're not then increasing your calories when you are eating, that is not what I'm talking about here, okay? I'm talking about why fasting is so good for the brain, okay? That is what I'm talking about. It's got nothing to do with weight loss as far as this episode. I just anecdotally, and not that this is anything scientific at all, but I personally fast, and I do two kinds of fasts. One of them I haven't done for a very long time, to be fair. But one thing that I used to do relatively often was doing a 2-day, sometimes a 3-day, which I found quite difficult, but a 2 to 3 day water fast. And when I talk about fasting, I'm talking about strict fasting. I'm talking about no energy coming in. I'm not talking about a juice cleanse. I'm talking about fasting where there's nothing, no food, no energy going in where you're drinking water. Okay. And I would do these 2 to 3 day fasts because, especially a few years ago, my eczema was very bad. And the only thing that would work to treat my eczema was cortisone, basically, which I don't like to do because cortisone has a whole range of side effects that are obviously not great. And I just really don't like it. And it got to a point where I'd use so much cortisone cream that it just no longer was effective on me. And then I would use cortisone pills, which of course are not great. And so the only other thing that I found to be extremely effective, obviously not as fast working, was fasting. When I would do a 2-day water fast, my skin would clear up amazingly. The itchiness would go just after, you know, I'd wake up if I would just by the time it was halfway through the day, the itchiness would subside dramatically. So I personally found fasting to help me with healing of my eczema. And then I would do it every couple of months. And that really, really did. I can truly say that for me personally, that helped me. The other kind of fasting that I currently do quite often is the intermittent fasting, where I have a much smaller window of eating. I personally love intermittent fasting because the beauty of intermittent fasting has got nothing to do with caloric restriction, because there's two kinds of fasting, quote unquote, that people talk about. We talk about calorie restriction versus intermittent fasting. And the beauty of everything that I'm about to talk about here when it comes to fasting is even if you were not to reduce your calories overall, but you were to create windows of fasting, you still get a lot of the neurological benefits of fasting. So if you're someone that's like, I don't want to restrict my calories, I don't want to be losing any weight, you don't have to. That's the beauty of it. You're just eating more in a smaller window and allowing your body a bigger window, like a proper fasting window where you are not consuming any energy, because your body goes into different states, different phases. When you're not consuming energy, things start to change and your body behaves differently when in a fasted state, as far as I'm talking about the brain specifically here, versus when you are not fasting, okay? So I personally love like I'm sure every single one of you love a good meal, love to eat. But I also, very fortunately, I'm not that hungry most mornings. And I'm not very strict on this, but I would say maybe 4 out of 7 mornings, I probably don't eat until maybe around 11 o'clock, sometimes 10, sometimes it's later. And then the last thing that I'll eat for the day is around 7 p.m. So my eating window is sometimes 7 hours, sometimes 8 hours, okay? And then the rest of it, I'm not eating. However, a lot of those times, it's not a strict fast because I will have coffee with milk earlier on in the day. But that's the kind of fasting that I like to do. I never feel restricted as far as my intake of food. I eat whatever I want. It works really well for me, okay? That's just my anecdotal points on fasting. Again, this is nothing to do with studies. I'm now going to go into actual studies around fasting. Now, for the purpose of this episode, I am going to be talking about intermittent fasting, as pretty much every single study that I read for this episode refers to intermittent fasting and not the longer versions of fasting. There's definitely benefits with the longer versions of fasting, but most of the data that I found when creating this episode, it's only talking about a 24-hour fast or even an intermittent fast where your eating window each day is around 6 to 8 hours and you're fasting for around, you know, 16 to 18 hours, okay? Which is great because it's a lot more achievable for a lot of people if you did want to start trying this fasting to see how you feel brain-wise, then it's a lot easier than doing like those fucking hectic water fasts that I was talking about, or even the longer fast. Not to say that there aren't benefits to the other kind of fasting. For sure there are, but that's, I'm just mentioning, we're going to be talking about intermittent fasting, which is like up to a 24-hour window. On a side note, if you did listen to my episode on the ketogenic diet and its effects, its positive effects on epilepsy and the reduction in seizures, you will already have a little bit of an understanding into what goes on in the brain and how things change in the brain. So the ketogenic diet was actually kind of discovered through fasting, because when people with epilepsy or when people who had frequent seizures would fast, they discovered that the seizures would be significantly reduced or would go away altogether. So they realized it had something to do with the energy intake. Then through that and through experimentation, they realized that it had to do with the kind of energy and how to kind of regulate the kind of energy that the brain was using. And when the brain is using ketone bodies as energy, there was substantially reduced seizures in people with epilepsy or just people who have seizures, okay? So that kind of, this idea of where the brain is getting energy from and what happens when you start to fast and how the brain changes its energy source is a really good indicator to show that already, even just when you look at people with epilepsy, there's already a massive change in the kind of activity that's going on in the brain and how energy is being used and stored and all of that. Another thing to keep in mind is that when I'm talking about intermittent fasting, there's no kind of dietary restrictions around that fast, okay? Of course, you want to be eating a balanced diet, whole foods and all of that, but it's literally still eating normal, your normal thing that you normally eat, but just with bigger windows of fasting, and you're still going to get all these great benefits. It's not cutting out a whole food group. It's not doing any of that. You're still going to get heaps of benefits. Now, I'm going to talk about a bunch of different topics. I'm going to try not to make this thing go for forever, because the point of breaking up these episodes was that they'd be more bite-sized and shorter. So bear with me on this one. But one thing that I wanted to cover to begin with was Parkinson's disease and fasting. And the reason that I wanted to talk about Parkinson's disease and fasting is because there's a lot of studies that are starting to show a lot of benefits on people with Parkinson's disease when they do intermittent fasting. Okay, now Parkinson's disease currently has no disease-modifying therapeutic options. There's just therapeutic options that currently will treat the symptoms, but there's nothing that's going to actually change how the disease progresses in the patients currently. Okay. But there are lots of studies that have tried intermittent fasting as a way to treat the pathophysiological changes within the brain. And the aim of intermittent fasting is to target something called mitochondrial function. And in Parkinson's disease, mitochondria dysfunction, which I'm going to go into in a second, plays a key role in the expression of the disease. And mitochondria are basically these membrane-bound organelles that live within cells, and their role is to generate most of the chemical energy needed to power a cell, okay? In Parkinson's disease, there is mitochondrial dysfunction. So there is dysfunction with those little organelles that are powering the cells. So then, of course, you then get a whole array of issues when the cells are not being powered properly, when the neurons are not getting powered properly. Really interestingly, there's been so many studies that demonstrate that intermittent fasting results in improving insulin sensitivity, a decrease in neurodegeneration, a decrease in neurotoxicity, reducing cognitive and motor decline, and enhancing neurogenesis, which is basically the creation of new neurons in certain parts of the brain. When you are fasting, you go into ketosis. So again, reference back to the episode I did on the ketogenic diet. Basically, it's where your body changes its energy source and it's using ketone bodies instead of glucose or carbohydrates as its energy source. So it goes into ketosis, and this upregulates GABA, which is the primary inhibitory neurotransmitter within the brain, which means, so you've got inhibition and excitation. If you're a long-term listener of this podcast, you can probably recite this because I've spoken about it a lot. But inhibition, you're reducing activity within the brain, and excitation, you're increasing activity within the brain and excitation, okay? So you're upregulating GABA, and therefore, when GABA is upregulated, you're promoting a decrease in excitotoxicity. So excitotoxicity is when there is too much excitability. This happens in seizures as well. When there's too much excitation or excitability within and in between brain cells and neurons, brain cells slash neurons. And when there's too much excitation, it can cause toxicity and it can damage nerve cells. When GABA is upregulated, you're then basically evening out what's going on here, and it's reducing the chances of excitotoxicity. Now, another way that fasting impacts the brain positively is that it increases something called autophagy. Now, this autophagy, auto, the self, Fagian comes from the word fagian, which means to eat. So it's basically, it means to eat oneself, which sounds a bit rogue, but it's basically the cells breaking down certain parts of itself and getting rid of it and replacing it. Okay. So it's basically, it's kind of like when I talk about a process in the brain called apoptosis, which is programmed cell death, where the cell is programmed to die in a proper way that doesn't negatively impact the cells around it, and it gets like broken down and eliminated because the cell is no longer useful or needed, or it's now going to be like a hindrance to the brain. So this is kind of like that, apoptosis, but instead it's with parts of the cell. So within sections of the cell, it's not necessarily the whole cell, okay? Now, it's really important to have autophagy because it's kind of like a good analogy that I read when I was actually doing this research was the analogy of a car. If you've got a car and the car's working really well, but the battery is dead, you're A, not going to keep trying to flog this battery because it's going to keep breaking down all the time. But you don't necessarily have to get rid of the whole car. That would just be ridiculous. So you're replacing the battery. The same goes for other parts of the car. You can replace many, 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 many parts of the car before you have to replace the car altogether. Replacing the car altogether is apoptosis, and autophagy is replacing parts of the car so the car is still working really well. And then when this happens, you've got this old debris is then removed by particular enzymes and they're broken down and then they're replaced and then all is well in the world. Now, one of the key factors to activate autophagy is nutrient deprivation, aka fasting. The raising of glucagon boosts autophagy, and autophagy is then reduced significantly or completely turned off by eating. So when there's an increase in insulin, glucose and proteins, then autophagy is going to be reduced. So basically when we're eating, it's going to be reduced. And you've got to remember, everything has to be in balance. So you don't want to always be in an autophagy state. That doesn't make sense because we have to be in this build and breakdown, build, breakdown. But everything goes in phases and goes in cycles. And ideally you want to facilitate both things. It's like feast and fast, that kind of idea. And to put your body in this state, reduced calorie or caloric restriction is not enough. It actually requires a fast. And this is also why sleeping is so important, because you are giving yourself a long window of course, all these other different kinds of recovery are going down in the body, but you're also fasting. And that's also why night eating is extremely unhealthy, and night eating is actually linked to a whole bunch of mood disorders such as depression, anxiety, and bipolar. And I don't even know if that's specifically related to autophagy or not, which I should even look into if that's linked. But obviously you can understand that there's a massive link between, you know, breaking up the time that you're not supposed to be eating with eating. It's going to have all these negative effects on your brain. This is how autophagy and Parkinson's disease are linked also, because with Parkinson's disease, you have a lot of, to summarize basically, debris that's not getting cleared up. A lot of neurodegenerative diseases have a lot of debris that doesn't get cleared up. That's why there's all these clinical trials going on where they're trying fasting on people with neurodegenerative diseases to see if you're increasing the rates of the release of this debris, and you're increasing the rates of the breakdown of this debris to have more clearance and less of these toxins in the brain, or, you know, reactive oxygen species within the brain and things like that. And there's this big understanding at the moment in the literature, or this, you know, theory that fasting can be one of the ways that can really benefit or enhance this release of these toxins that are floating around within the brain. And of course, you can also understand that I'm talking now about long-term benefits of fasting for the brain with neurodegenerative diseases. We're also now going to cover short-term benefits of fasting on the brain. Fasting also releases something called growth hormone. Now, growth hormone is crucial for the recovery of everything within your body. When you sleep, you also get growth hormone release. When you go into deep sleep and REM sleep stages, you get growth hormone release. But also when you fast, you get an increase in growth hormone release. And in one particular study of 47 participants, it was found that a 24-hour fast increased human growth hormone levels up to fivefold in certain individuals, okay? And insulin levels are low during fasted states, and when insulin levels are released, it can then disrupt this growth hormone signaling. So there's this big difference between when we're eating, insulin, glucose, all of that, versus when we're fasting and then you get a reduction in insulin. There seems to be a big link between insulin and all these other things that happen when you are fasting versus when you're not. Now, in a paper published in PubMed in 2022, the paper's called The Effects of Intermittent Fasting on Brain Metabolism, there's all this evidence that shows that metabolic changes from a fasting state improve cognitive performance, increase neuroplasticity, increase resistance to injury and disease, basically increase a whole range of cognitive performance within the brain. This paper also states that overfeeding is harmful for brain metabolism and can also increase neurodegeneration and manifestation of disease. So the combination of overfeeding on a regular basis, but also not allowing enough time where you're not eating, may contribute to neurodegeneration and manifestation of diseases. I'm currently specifically talking about neurological diseases, but there are papers that talk about diseases across the board. Another great thing about these articles that when you're comparing caloric restriction versus intermittent fasting, it actually seems that intermittent fasting is just superior than caloric restriction for benefits within the brain. Because they do say that to live a long life, you want to slightly restrict your calories as far as for neurological diseases are concerned. But intermittent fasting is still even more superior than overall caloric restriction for the benefits within the brain. And I believe, and a lot of people across the studies also claim, that it is easier to adhere to than overall caloric restriction across every meal. And a lot of people find it a lot easier to have a bigger fasting window, but then eat the foods that they want to eat and have a balanced diet versus cutting out an entire food group and then craving it and missing it. So I think that's why it's always worked for me, because I've never been in a state where I feel really hungry. I still feel like I eat what I want to eat, but my windows of eating are just a lot smaller. And yeah, it just shows across the board, across studies, that intermittent fasting is superior. Now, the brain accounts for 25% of the body's resting metabolic rate, 25%. Okay, so it's using a lot of fucking energy. And when fasting, the brain switches from using glucose as energy relatively quickly. It runs through the glucose stores in your body pretty quickly. We don't have this massive unlimited supply of this kind of energy for the brain to use. So once it's run through the glucose stores, it then switches to ketone bodies as its fuel source. And that's when we start to see the benefits of intermittent fasting on the brain. Because another thing that happens is you get the release of BDNF, which is brain-derived neurotrophic factor. Love it. There's other ways that you can also release brain-derived neurotrophic factor. HIIT training is really good. Saunas are also great to release BDNF. But basically, it's a nerve growth factor. And this thing is responsible for maintaining synaptic function. That's the connectivity between neurons, neurogenesis within the hippocampus. And that's the part of the brain that's involved in learning, memory, all of that. It's also involved in synaptic function in general, okay? Fasting increases rates of brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And in rat and mice models, intermittent fasting raised the expression of brain-derived neurotrophic factor, and this led to increased density of spines, dendritic spines within the neurons of the hippocampus, which led to improved memory, improved spatial learning, and also hippocampal neurogenesis as well. So we're seeing this across rodent models and also across human studies as well. Of course, it's a lot easier to make a really well-structured study on rodent models versus on human models. So that's where a lot of the data comes from, these models. But yeah, we're seeing that intermittent fasting has this great release of BDNF, which is very, very good for the brain. It's very neuroprotective. BDNF is extremely neuroprotective. And if you are somebody who suffers from mood disorders and things like that, or high stress levels especially, a lot of anxiety, a lot of chronic stress, doing things that are going to increase your levels of brain-derived neurotrophic factor are going to be extremely helpful. And you'll definitely, hopefully, notice a lot of benefits and changes in your mood and how you feel. Now, the last thing that I wanted to talk about is the hormone ghrelin, because ghrelin is an orexigenic peptide, which is basically, well, peptides are chains of amino acids, which are building blocks to proteins, and orexigenic meaning appetite stimulating versus anorexigenic meaning appetite suppressant. So yeah, ghrelin is an orexigenic peptide. It's secreted mainly from the stomach and it stimulates appetite, and it also stimulates growth hormone release, which is all about recovery. It's all about, you know, all the good things that I just spoke about the entire episode. Ghrelin also regulates food intake. It regulates energy metabolism. It stimulates neurogenesis, and it also increases these osteoblast proliferation kind of things, which is basically strengthening of bones, and myogenesis, which is skeletal muscle tissue, okay? Around 60 to 70% of ghrelin is secreted within the stomach. And then the remainder comes from small intestines. Low levels of ghrelin expression also happen in the hypothalamus, the pituitary, kidney, bones, placenta, etc. But most of it is within the stomach. And when people have gastric bypass surgery or gastric sleeve surgery, they're getting a massive reduction in ghrelin and in this appetite or hunger, quote unquote, hormone, because you're cutting out a huge source of where the ghrelin is produced. Okay. So then you're not as hungry anymore. You're not just restricting how much food can fit into the stomach, but you are actually reducing the, where the hormone is being produced. There's also a condition called Prader-Willi syndrome, and that's where patients don't get a reduction in ghrelin, so they feel hungry all the time. They always need to eat. They always feel hungry, and they just don't feel satisfied. So you're not getting the reduction of ghrelin after you eat, because ghrelin levels go up, and then when you eat, of course, they drop down. And then again, when you're about to eat, they're going up again. It's also capable of crossing the blood-brain barrier, so it's acting upon the brain, and it's creating all these benefits that we're seeing that I just mentioned across the board as well. So there's a big chance that ghrelin is also one of the things that's causing the activation of all these other things that I was just talking about as far as brain-derived neurotrophic factor, obviously human growth hormone release, which we spoke about, autophagy, all these things that are going on, synaptic plasticity and regeneration within the brain, you know, healing, breakdown, healing, neurogenesis, synaptic plasticity, all of those things in the brain. So that's kind of my summary as to what happens with fasting within the brain and why it is so beneficial. Short term, you're going to see benefits because you recover better. You're getting more human growth hormone release. You're going to consolidate memory better. Your mood you're going to feel better overall with your mood because of the BDNF release, brain-derived neurotrophic factor release. Your brain regions are likely to communicate better because of all this synaptic plasticity that's going on. So your cognitive function, your memory, everything is improving on a short-term and mid-term level. But then also when you look at long-term and what you're doing for your brain health in the future moving forward, you can look at how it potentially has a huge impact on staving off neurodegeneration, or if you have already started with a neurodegenerative disease, how it can actually really slow down that process potentially by helping with the clearance of, you know, the, you know, debris within the brain. Hopefully that has given you some food for thought. And yeah, let me know. Write in the Facebook group. Let me know what you think. If you guys have tried intermittent fasting and you found that it helps your cognition or that it helps your mood, definitely jump onto the Facebook group and share your stories with intermittent fasting. I think it's just a really, really, really interesting field, and it's just fascinating the impacts on the brain that intermittent fasting has. Again, anecdotally, personally, I'm an advocate. I really like it. But also keep in mind that every single individual is different. There's going to be some people that try it and absolutely cannot adhere, absolutely hate it, and that's perfectly fine too. You're still getting a good, ideally 8 to 9 hour window when you're, you know, sleeping anyway. If you are someone, however, that does eat during nighttime, like during your sleep, you wake up to eat when you've eaten a normal amount of food during the day, and this happens more than twice a week, then you should be going to see a specialist about that, because that can be linked to mood disorders and things like that later down the track. So I would definitely see to that and sort that out, because it's not normal. Cool beans, that is the episode of today. Hopefully you found that really helpful. Love you guys so much. Thanks for tuning in. I'm loving these deeper science brain fact episodes, and so far the feedback has been great too. So danke. As always, remember, be kind to yourself, be kind to your brain. Don't take shit from anyone, and especially don't take shit from yourself. Danke.